Everybody's working on their Twitter IPO lines this morning. Here's mine. The tweet smell of success, question mark. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. We'll have the global perspective on business and economics in a moment. But first, the short message: social media company Twitter wants to sell many little slices of itself to the public. It announced its initial public offering idea in a tweet, of course. Marketplace's Mark Garrison joins us live. Morning, Mark.
Good morning, David.
One word in that tweet is getting a lot of attention: confidentially. Explain what that means, to confidentially file for a public IPO.
Yeah, in the thousands and thousands of replies and retweets of that message, some people were confused. Well, wait, how is it confidential if you just tweet it to the entire world about it? Now, the P that's in IPO is public, of course, and that idea is a company has to share information about its business to the public so people can decide if they want to invest. But Twitter yet doesn't have to make its information public. And this is something a little new. When the Jobs Act became law last year, it allowed companies with less than $1 billion in revenue to keep their IPO documents confidential until much later in the process. So right now, we don't really get to look under the hood at Twitter to see how well it's actually doing.
The Jobs Act, about jobs. Now, the company stands to raise maybe billions from this IPO. What could they do with the money?
Well, once a company is public, the investors want growth and more growth. Twitter needs a war chest to do that, and they have to expand their advertising business. Just this week, they spent around $350 million buying a mobile ad company. They may want to buy more companies or more staff or spend more money marketing. It takes a lot of cash in a multi-billion dollar IPO. That's one way to get it.
Marketplace's Mark Garrison, thank you.
Thank you.
Now let's do the numbers. In London, the FT 100 is down 0.3%. The key stock index in Shanghai fell 0.9%. S&P Dow and NASDAQ futures are all down. 5 years ago this Sunday, I was with Wall Street folks as they piled off the late train from Manhattan. They had seen battle that day, their faces wooden. One Deutsche Bank guy told me that evening, it'll take 20 years to fix this. September 15th, 2008, Lehman Brothers went bust, and we've been looking at the lessons from many angles this week, from the fraudulent subprime mortgage brokers here at home to the continuing global mess. From Dublin, Ireland, Christopher Worth reports.
For lot number 19, start me at...
The final moments of a failed financial institution. An auctioneer in Dublin sells off the art collection once owned by Anglo-Irish Bank, Ireland's most notorious pre-crash lender.
Fair warning of 2003.
Anglo-Irish and banks like it made scores of bad property loans that cost taxpayers billions of dollars and forced the country into a bailout.
Last chance at 4,000...
Dublin resident Ronan Farron stopped in to have a look at the paintings.
It's been a disgrace how the country has been sold, if you like, because of the mistakes of the bankers.
The resulting economic crisis was so deep, it's worked its way into every aspect of Irish life and culture.
Okay, so we're just going to clip along through a couple of things.
A theater rehearsal in Dublin. The characters in this play are a couple ground down by financial worries.
There are debts we haven't cleared. I just want to...
Baby. We're both professionals. All right, we'll both be working soon, I promise.
But the promise fades into long-term unemployment. So they do what a lot of young Irish people have done lately. They leave Ireland to find work, although it doesn't always go so well.
We both made the decision to come here, okay? We both came here for the opportunities.
Opportunities?
Yes, the opportunities.
Danny McCoy of Ireland's Chamber of Commerce says the crisis has caused too many people in Ireland to either immigrate or essentially put their lives on hold. But he says that's partly because the narrative about Ireland has been overly negative.
The Irish story has been exaggerated of all proportion. People perceive Ireland as some kind of poor, backward European country, which couldn't be further from the truth.
McCoy says Ireland is already well into recovery. Sure, it's still in recession, but exports from Irish software and engineering companies are rising by more than 15% a year. The one thing that's missing, he says, is confidence on the home front, the confidence to spend.
Households start to spend again and believe in their own future. They kickstart a very virtuous circle of growth.
In fact, for a country brought down by a property bubble, McCoy's message is one that many thought they wouldn't hear again for a long time in Ireland.
Buy a house. Buy a house. There's plenty of them.
It's advice that might not be too far-fetched. Near Dublin's waterfront, real estate agent Owen Riley shows me around the city's technology and financial services district.
Flambeau Quay here, Forbes Quay, where my office is based, and this is Gallery Quay.
In the wake of Ireland's crash, Riley says real estate values here dropped by more than half. But demand for housing and office space is on the rise in Dublin. In the past year, Riley says prices in this neighbourhood have jumped more than 15%.
I would predict before this year is out, it'll increase another 5%.
He says an average two-bedroom apartment now goes for upwards of $400,000. And many, like Danny McCoy of Ireland's Chamber of Commerce, fear another housing bubble is already brewing in the Irish capital. He says that's because supply hasn't kept up. Practically no new housing or office space has been built in the past 5 years.
Well, we're going to need to start building, fast. And there's always a danger that we'll go headlong into property again. But, you know, have a good time along the way.
Of course, having a good time, well, that's what got Ireland into trouble in the first place. In Dublin, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
And before we go, for any of you who thought about switching banks to get better terms but decided it was too much of a hassle, there is this from Britain. Officials there would like to see more competition in retail banking, and to that end, new rules go into effect in the UK on Monday that force banks to let you switch in 7 working days or less. People in the UK keep the same bank account on average for 17 years. The average marriage in Britain lasts 11 and a half years. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.